Om Shanti. First of all, lots of remembrance and thanks to beloved Shri Baba who has made this happen. Nothing happens by chance. And Didi Nirmala, Didi Jayanti and Suna Didi, who in a very short period of time, and especially with Baba's season, were able to put this together, facilitation of timing and dates and etc., but finally we are here. So I'm told that today we are going to talk in Punjabi language. Yeah? Or you want to talk in Tamil? Or Hindi? Hindi? Okay. Or English? Well, if you had asked us to speak in French, it would have been as difficult for us as probably Punjabi is for you. So we'll go the middle path. We'll go for English. So, how many people here would say that sometime in their life they have felt a little down, maybe sad, maybe depressed? Oh, that's a good number. So we are in majority. So now we are talking about ourselves. We are not talking about my neighbor. I'm not talking about that aunt of mine who lives in the village. We are talking about ourselves. It happens to all of us. The way it manifests may change. When you come into knowledge, the way you feel may change. How we experience it may change. But the core remains the same. And today we are going to talk about how the soul could be the starting point for bringing about a difference. Now this year you are going to hear a lot about it. Because World Health Organization decided, and actually it was launched 3 days back on the 7th of April, which is the World Health Day. Not World Mental Health Day, it's the World Health Day. So any health issue which is of extreme importance to the entire world is picked up and then it is taken on for the next 1 year. So why did they decide on depression? Any guesses?
Lots of cases.
Right. Yes. Right. Economics. Partly right. Okay. Three basic reasons. First is, not only is depression becoming the biggest threat in terms of the number of cases. And not only the number of cases of depression, but also the number of cases of associated illnesses, as we call it. Whether it is diabetes, or it is high blood pressure, or it is cancers, or it is common colds, or it is addictions. They are all linked to depression. And depression as a part of other psychological problems. That's one reason. Second is the number of people who die because of it, mortality as we call it. Directly in terms of suicide or indirectly in terms of number of years people live less because of depression. And the third is economics. Because of depression, the highest amount of loss to the population in terms of the economics, the amount that people can work, their ability to work, their ability to earn, their ability to look after themselves or their families, and the burden on the society. So these are the three reasons that were picked up. Just to give you a few statistics before we come into the spiritual aspects of depression, so to say. Today we have about 300 million cases of depression, severe depression. That's about 5 to 6% of the global population. Minor depressions, another about 10%. Lifetime chances of people having depression, about 6%. So anybody sitting here, one in five people at some point of time would face depression. And one in 10 people will have a moderate to severe depression, and one in 20 people at this point of time has serious depression. Those are the international statistics. Anyway, I'm sure most of you who have gone to even Abu Road or the market of Mount Abu, the first thing that stares you in the face is the numbers, the number of people. And that's the numbers that we have in the country. We are the depression capital of the world. India has the highest number of cases at this point of time of people suffering from serious forms of depression. And linked with that, as I was saying, is also addiction, especially alcohol. Now, three groups have been identified by WHO, which are of importance. One is adolescents, where you have the highest number in terms of the children who are become adolescents, or adolescents who are becoming adults having depression. And especially in India, the unfortunate part is that it is this age group where the highest number of attempted suicides happen. The second group is women, because of various reasons, hormonal, psychosocial, their place in the society, etc., etc., certain practices in certain parts of the world, because of which they become much more vulnerable, and they have twice the chances of having depression compared to their male counterparts. And the third group that's emerging is the elderly, beyond 60. Because that's an age group which is fast emerging all over the world because of better medical conditions. People are living longer, but they are also living alone. They are also living with more illnesses. They are also on more medication, and thus many of them may also be, as a group, having more depression than the rest of the population. Now, I don't think I need to go into the symptoms of depression at this point of time. I'm sure most of you know it, because most of you, as you said, have gone through it at some point of time or the other. But what differentiates a normal sadness from feeling down to reaching a clinical depression is the number of days that you have it, which means it must be prolonged, the amount of disability that you have, which means it doesn't only affect your mood, but it also affects your day-to-day functioning, your sleep, your appetite, your weight, your ability to do things, your vitality, and the way our mind functions and the kind of thoughts that we have. The spiral of negative thoughts about ourselves, about others, about the future. We call it a clinical triad of hopelessness, worthlessness, and feeling that nothing is going to work out. How many of you would reflect and say that after coming to Gyan or after coming to knowledge, there has been a shift in the way that you have perceived your moods? Okay. So what kind of shift has happened?
More detached observer, so no worry.
Okay. Okay. So one thought was that you become more of an observer and thus you have less of worry. And the other was that earlier on also it used to come, but it used to last. And now it comes, but it comes, touches and goes. Okay? Pardon? Okay. So there is a deep sense of security and support that you experience with Gyan.
You can spend right. A whole hour talking about few things about Gyan. I mean the family.
Right, cohesiveness of the family, the support of the family.
Connection with Baba and that we're going to the golden age. It's very intoxicating.
Right.
Keep going on and on.
Right. Okay. So many of you have felt that there is a shift that has happened in your consciousness or in your way of thinking, and Dr. Sujata is going to talk about how the knowledge can be brought into self-therapy or the kind of therapy that we do with others. The principles that are there in any kind of a spiritual knowledge, especially Baba's knowledge, which we can apply not only in clinical settings like me and Sujata does, but also in day-to-day living with yourself and with people around. Now before that, I want to take you to a slightly different journey, which will probably make it easier for you to understand how spirituality can help in not only depression, but psychological or physical illnesses. How many of any medical or paramedical professionals are here? Okay, about 10, 12, fine, great. There's something that medical profession hasn't yet started talking about, because especially in the Western sense, we don't consider consciousness to be a part of this entire being. In most of the situations, it's only the body. What you can scan, what you can draw blood out of, what you can do an X-ray of, what you can make a physical diagnosis of. People like me are still fighting to include mind into a part of the body, which is now called the mind-body medicine. But actually, mindfulness is a way of looking at life, technique. But you know what I am. Most people think of it as a body, especially the medical professionals, and thus they only focus on that. And that's why the topic which is there with WHO is depression, let's talk, but the question is, let's talk what? Should I only talk about how it is a physical illness, which it is, and we're going to talk about that a little, but is that all that we have to talk about? Is that all the possibility that is? Is there the only way that we can help ourselves? Are 300 million people in the world and about 30 million people in this country going to be only helped by psychiatrists? I don't think so. It hasn't happened in the West, and I'm saying that with full knowledge of how the medical profession works. It's doing an excellent job in terms of helping people who have severe depression. And severe depression means that you can't sit up, you can't function, you can't go to work, you don't feel any vitality, you can't sleep, you lose weight, etc., etc. and it goes on for days and weeks. And any one of you who may have gone through that kind of a depression or knows somebody who has gone through that kind of a depression, I know, I can also say that, knows that when you touch that real rock bottom, it's a real physical phenomena. At that point of time, it needs medical help. And there are many reasons for that. Many times, partly it's genetic. Many times, it's because you have another physical illness which predisposes you to depression, especially diseases of the thyroid, hormonal problems, certain medication, or if you are malnourished, or certain deficiencies, especially now of vitamin D. We know that all that is there, and including certain chronic physical illnesses, especially cancers. They predispose a person to depression. And once that happens, you have to get treatment. Because if you don't cross that barrier, you can't come to the barrier of the mind and the soul. It's required. But having said that, if I just stop at that, which is what happens in most of the Western medicine, then you have actually lost a very, very special chance, I would say, to come in touch with yourself. A lot of times when we go within, we feel like excluding ourselves from others. Some people call it a spiritual crisis. Some people call it an existential crisis. Existential crisis basically means that you are in the world, but you don't feel a part of the world. You feel that something is missing, and you are looking for that. And once that happens, you start to question some of the things that have been going on in our life. It may get precipitated by an illness. It may get precipitated by a failed relationship. It may get precipitated by loss of a job or loss of your esteem as a person. But whatever the reason, it makes you come in touch with yourself. If you go too deep and you lose yourself, you go into depression. If you are in control and you are still functioning, then you have a chance of going beyond your physical body and touching the core within you. And I know, having interacted with a large number of people in India and outside this country, that for a large number of us, when you start looking for a spiritual solution, it is at a time when you are feeling low in your life. And at that point of time, if you deny that feeling, you cannot come in touch with yourself. But if you are too deep in that feeling, you are not able to swim out of it. So that balance is required. So if you have a physical illness causing depression, or if you have severe depression, you need treatment. If you are suicidal, you immediately need treatment. And incidentally, one suicide happens every 14 seconds in this world. We have lost a person in the world right now. In the minute, in the pause that I gave you. So, let's not negate that side either. Because somewhere, when especially this is the thought that we have to help the entire world, then you also have to help those who are in deep distress. So whatever way we can help, and especially when somebody is on the verge of ending the life, that's a crisis. You cannot give gyan to that person at that point of time. You have to rescue that person physically. That's appropriate. Now, if we were to just look at the continuum, which we understand here now, of the soul, mind and body, do you believe that there is something called soul? I know I'm asking a very stupid question. But I want to ask this for a very specific reason. So we believe that there is a soul? Okay. So no converts here. Everybody believes. That's what soul does. So what does the soul do? It just keeps sitting here and says Om Shanti. Actually, it goes beyond and does many things. It tries to express itself through this instrument. The only way that I can express myself, the qualities of my soul, is through my mind and my body. There's no other way. If I was standing, I could shout but still not get across to you. This helps me to be able to get across to you. So similarly, whatever I do, however I interact with people, and how I evolve as a person, is all done through my body and my mind. So there is a combination of the soul, the mind, and the body at all points of time. But many of us are not able to understand as to how the soul makes the body function. Actually, the soul creates the body. Now, this is not going to be taught in many of the medical bookstops like. You know, when we are born, we have a certain number of cells. And actually, if we were to go back, when we were conceived, there were only two cells, a male and a female cell. And they combine and then they start multiplying. How do they multiply? Randomly? There's a purpose. Each and every organ that's formed in the body is formed according to a plan. And that plan is much, much more delicate than anything any human being, any computer has ever created. The human body has 100 trillion cells. Human brain has 100 billion cells. And each one is in sync, total sync with each other. Some parts take the food, digest it. And then, like a good team, give it to the blood and the blood carries it all over the body. And then you have special cells, some which makes the heart beat, some which makes us take deep breaths, some which makes us walk, others that make us think. And each functions with the other like a click-clock mechanism. But the other beauty is that as we evolve, it's not the same cell that I was born with. When I was born, I had started to die. Each cell is programmed to die by itself. And if it doesn't die, it becomes cancer. Cancer is actually proliferation of the cells beyond its necessity. So when each cell is dying, then it is replaced by another cell. Now where do I need more cells? I don't need more cells here, for sure. Now if I was conscious, then a part of me will say, okay, no more fat cells, enough. I need more of muscles. So something decides within me that this is how it should evolve. Each cell, different parts of the body, is programmed to die in a certain amount of time. For example, my skin dies in 5 days. My stomach lining dies in 30 days. My heart muscles die in about a year, year and a half. The last is bones. Solid, rock solid. Die in 7 years. My genetic material dies in 5 years. I don't have the same genes I was born with. It's all been replaced. But what is the blueprint that gives it the indication to replace? It is my soul which has the knowledge through my mind which directs the body. Soul, the consciousness, and if you believe in past lives, then past lives bring on certain impressions, call it sanskars, call it karmas. And that says, okay, this is the kind of things I have brought to you in this lifetime. I have a choice to make a change. If I express my consciousness differently, my body would be different. Somebody said, I experience the pain less than I used to before. That's because over a period of time, the external stimulus has remained the same. And yet your reaction to it has changed. The reaction hasn't been changed by the body. If there is a pain, you will experience the pain. It's your mind which is being experienced in the consciousness which steps back, like he said, and says, okay, there is pain, but it doesn't matter. I have more important things to do. So when the soul through the mind is creating the body, then it means that at some point of time, if I have a physical problem or I have a mental health issue, then still if I have a very empowered soul, I can shift it to feel less of that sadness or depression. By changing the thoughts. Yeah. But to be able to change the thought, there has to be first a change in consciousness. Now. Okay. Actually, before we change the thoughts, okay, I'll come to this, but a little gradually. Now, if I have to do that, first, I have to be empowered enough physically and mentally to be able to be aware of my processes of consciousness. And that's why going within becomes important. Going into silence becomes important. You cut the clatter and you start touching base with yourself. Once that happens, then you are able to look at what is it that you want to do, which direction you want to go. And sometimes it happens consciously, but a large number of times it's happening subconsciously. Before we change the thought, there is a change in intention. Intention is more subtle. Intention is at the energy level. Thought is the expression that I can experience. There is first a kind of a wave in consciousness, and that wave in consciousness then brings about a specific thought. I hold on to that thought brings on a certain emotion. If it's a pleasant emotion, I experience that and I move in that direction. I may do a physical act, or it may be just a thought with the consequent emotion. And once that happens, either an action or a thought with emotion, it becomes a memory. And that's a complete cycle. The intention can only change at the level of consciousness. Do Brahmins feel depressed? Yes? Why? Not here? So when we are in Madhuban, you don't feel depressed. You go back home, feel depressed. It happens. Yes? Some amount of shift in also happens because of the atmosphere. People around you, the interaction that you have. But Madhuban can't hold 25,000 people every day. And that's not the intention anyway. We will all have to be the seeds that go somewhere else, and once having planted there, then bring about a change in that place. Brahmins, once we start living a certain life, sometimes expect that now, today onwards, I am VK, so a total brain transplant, a consciousness transplant has happened, everything is going to be honky-dory tomorrow. It doesn't happen like that. Because it's a process. It's a process first of letting go of certain things in this lifetime and then maybe the previous lifetimes. Something that I'm not even aware of at this point of time. So again, it's very subtle. Second is, yes, it can happen within me, but what if when you go back home? When you are going on the road and somebody just comes and nudges you. Or you go to your office and your boss says, hey guy, haven't done your work well today. Or you have a fight with your spouse. Those are the challenging situations in which the testing happens of how resilient one has become. And that is a process. And that process can take, according to drama, where we are, to where we have to go, and how much of effort we are doing. So based on that, of course, the changes start happening. But the minute you become aware of a meditative lifestyle, and I think over here we need to make a little differentiation, mindfulness that was spoken of. Mindfulness is just a way of looking at things. We do that even in Gyan. Mindfulness is a technique which has been a Buddhist technique, which has been now made into a kind of a therapy as well, including for depression, also for anxiety mainly. Where you are in the present, you look at things as they are, you accept them as they are, and you allow things which you are used to not accepting to just let go. But Rajyoga meditative lifestyle is different than just a meditation. A meditation is you sit, you do a certain technique, maybe after some time it even can become a ritual, and then you just keep on doing that. I'm going in meditation. Don't touch me, don't bother me. I must have my incense, the right ambience, the right light, the right kind of noise, etc., etc., right time only. I can't do it otherwise. That's just meditation. And that also is not really meditation. That's meditation with a rider. Like saying, oh, I can be very, very happy, content, peaceful, if the world will let me be. World will not let me be. Because that's the way I'm supposed to evolve. That's the challenge that I have to face to evolve. And once having evolved, I will not even see it as a challenge. It becomes natural. But when we talk about a meditative lifestyle, which can be extremely useful in terms of helping our moods and including in mild to moderate forms of depression, is where not only you decide when you want to wake up, but you also decide in what consciousness you want to wake up, in what consciousness you want to sleep, in what consciousness you want to eat, in what consciousness you will interact with other people, What would be your purpose of life? How you are going to make a plan of action for reaching there, and how you are going to keep checking whether you are reaching there. And then once having been able to do it yourself, how you are going to apply it to others, because that's where the real test comes in service. Because it's only in service that your internal condition gets reflected. So it's a complete package. Yes, sitting in meditation is extremely helpful. It helps you to ground yourself. It helps you to start looking at life in a mindful way. But that's not where it stops. That's just the battery recharging. You don't charge your phone and then just say, okay, I'm going to just keep it there. You have to use it and then recharge it again. So that's a process which we have to keep doing on a day-to-day basis. There are some very, very specific, powerful principles which Sujata will be talking about, which over a period of time we have taken from Gyan and how it could be applied in our day-to-day functioning, and how on a very, very easy, practical, simple way, while you are going about doing your work, living your life normally, you can still apply those principles. You don't have to say, oh, I'm a BK, so this is how I do things. Subtly you bring about a change in consciousness. So coming back to, do BKs feel low or depressed? Okay, so how do we feel it? Incidentally, any one of us, and I have been knowing about it for years, I have been practicing many of the things myself, I could also go through depression. I have. So that's fine. Any one of us can have a clinical depression. And we often say people who are surrendered also to have depression. Their form may change. They may not cry continuously as somebody from the outside does. They may not stop working. They may not stop sleeping. They may not think like committing suicide. But if you talk to them within minutes, both of you can recognize that yes, the person is not the same as the person was. It's like a battery being discharged. And there can be many reasons, some which I have outlined. Any one of us can have a chronic physical illness. Any one of us can have a life situation or lose a very close person. And it affects all of us. I can share with this group that I lost my father about 20 years back, in a few seconds. I was taking him to the doctor because I knew something was wrong, and I knew that he's having a heart attack, and I knew I'm not going to make it to the hospital, and I knew when I reached the hospital that he's not there. So my day had started differently and ended very differently. It can happen to any one of us. And it can have implications for any one of us. If you are on certain medication which have certain side effects, or if you have certain deficiencies, it can happen any one of us. If you have a genetic predisposition or a loading, or you had a very, very terrible childhood, or you are living in a country where there is bombing happening every time that you get out of the house, or you are living in a place where you are not sure whether your visa is going to be revoked or not, it can happen to any one of us. You have planned your life differently and it turns out differently at the end of the day. And if somebody says, oh, it doesn't matter to me, I think that would be abnormal response. So feeling low is normal. How we respond to it is something that we can change. And knowledge actually helps us to do that. It doesn't guarantee anywhere that you would not be facing those situations. It doesn't guarantee that you would have a different response to a very, very painful situation. But how you choose to respond out of different options is something that we can do for ourselves. Now, Brahmins usually feel it as mild irritability, mild crying, moods, not feeling comfortable with one person, not liking a particular situation, wanting things only in a certain way, becoming disturbed if things are not as they were, feeling very, very uncomfortable if somebody questions you, especially about jnana. And these are things that Brahmins usually don't express. Many reasons, but one of the reasons is that, well, you're supposed to be at the pinnacle of knowledge and spirituality, and how can I feel like that? Maybe the shame, maybe the guilt, maybe a feeling that others, what they will think of you, etc., etc. Also, in some ways, it's a very lonely life. And I know that in other parts of the world, there could be one sister or one brother who is having many others. And if this particular person goes and says, oh, I'm also not feeling good, how it would be seen by others? So you don't have anybody to talk to. And then somewhere saying that, oh, I have been in knowledge for so many years and me? And then saying, why me? Baba, I have been such a nice child of yours and see what you have done and etc., etc. So I think first step of let's talk is that it's okay to know that you have an emotion which you may be uncomfortable about. And which, if it is very severe, may be very disturbing, including depressing. Second, to know that the longer you allow it to go on, the worse it will become, and the more it will affect you. Third, that there is a way out. If it is severe, there is a medical way out, there is a therapeutic way out, there is a spiritual way out. And I think it's important for all of us to start connecting at that level. If we can be very, very compassionate to somebody who has come for knowledge to my center, why can't I be compassionate to my brother and sister in jnana, or maybe my senior in jnana who feels down? It should be actually an acceptable and okay reaction. And I can only assure you one thing, and I'm using the word assure. How many of you have been in a war zone? Okay. How many of you have been to the emergency room of a hospital? How long do you want to stay there? Yeah. You want to just get out. But with coming times, you may have no options. Because in the coming times, those war zones may not be out there. The hospital emergencies may not be out there. It may be within the places that we live in. Or at least the expressions of it, if not the physical violence of it. Or at least the emotional expression of it. So I think we are going to face more and more of it. And the more we learn to share, the more we learn to say, it's okay, we are on this boat together. And there are going to be ups and downs, and each one of us can go through it. That doesn't make me a weaker or a stronger person. It's a normal human emotion. If we can talk, and then we can talk freely with those who come into the centers. You know, I know that the situation is a little different in the other parts of the world than in India. But one of the biggest challenges that we are facing is that there is a lot of television and radio services that are happening, because of which people expect that there are spiritual solutions to emotional problems. And if you are not willing to talk about it, and if you are not willing to be able to know about it and be able to share it with those who come, then others will not come to us, because they are not coming to us just to become deities. That happens much later. You know, I'm sure any one of you who came into Jnana, including me who came into it, didn't come because first day I was told, oh, so many years later you are going to be standing here in a temple and people are going to come and bow to you. That wasn't the package that I was given. Incidentally, the package I was given, and something you brought out, it happened to me 25 years back, and I'm going to end with just this sharing. I came here, Gyan Sarovar was just built. This is 92, 1st of February, I remember the date very well. And it was a retreat of the foreigners, about 100, maybe similar numbers, from different parts of the world. And I was called by the Australian group while I was living in India. I don't know why I was asked to come, but I came. And the atmosphere was so charged from morning to evening. And at that point of time, Dadis had nothing else to do but to talk to us. So for almost 12 hours, we used to have all the Dadis and all the brothers and all the NCs and RCs the world over. And very powerful moments. And third day onwards, and I was going through very serious burnout. Not burnout because I wasn't doing much, but burnout because I had achieved a lot. Too much was happening in life. Too soon. And I actually thought, oh, I'm going to get a 5-day break from my routine, from my clinical practice. I'll just come and maybe sleep here for 5 days. But destiny had other things in plan. And third day onwards, I started feeling discouraged.